Dr. James Prochaska, you developed a theory about the stages of change, you know, what steps people typically go through when they make a major behavioral change. I want to get to those. But first, why update that very famous book that you wrote about these stages 35 years ago? What's new in the field of behavior change?
Well, Changing for Good has become a classic, and we're pleased with that. But over the last 20 years, there's been major breakthroughs. For example, major breakthroughs on how to help people change multiple behaviors. And of the major killers of our time, average adult has two or more of those. So being able to change multiple behaviors is particularly relevant. Smoking, alcohol abuse, unhealthy diets, and inadequate exercise.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people would like to change their habits when it comes to those behaviors, but why do most people fail when they're trying to change?
Well, that's a key question. And when I ask both professionals and public that question, usually the answer they give is they don't have enough willpower, they don't have enough motivation, they don't have enough confidence. The fact is, most people don't know how to change. And the good thing is, if it's a matter of education and understanding, that we can change quite readily.
You theorize that behavior change actually starts way before we start taking action, that the first stage is pre-contemplation, and then you move on to contemplating change. What does that mean, and how does that happen?
Okay, pre-contemplation is a stage in which people are not intending to take action in the foreseeable future. They can be there out of a lack of knowledge. So there's millions of Americans who are couch potatoes who can't imagine that their couch could kill them. But they can also be demoralized. So way too many Americans have tried too many times and too many ways to lose weight. They become demoralized, and they've given up on their abilities to change. So they can be in pre-contemplation. Then what we need to do is to help them to counter that demoralization. And one of the ways you do is you find out, hey, there are things I don't know about changing. There's things that I can do that can start to break me out of this and start to help me progress right away.
Dr. James Prochaska, so then you start contemplating change. And then there's the preparation stage. You start preparing for change. That's before you even start taking any action. How do you prepare? How do you get to that stage where you're preparing for change? What does that look like?
Let's start with contemplation, because here, folks, their awareness and appreciation of the benefits of changing have gone up, but they're really ambivalent. Is it worth it? Is it not? Should I put it off? And the rule of thumb is, when in doubt, don't act. And so we help them to take and start to lower the cons. For example, the number one con for regular exercise is time.
I don't have time to exercise.
Right. Yeah. So we let them know this is the bargain basement of behaviors. You like bargains? This is the behavior for you. And in the book, we help them appreciate and to rate what's out of 60 scientific behaviors, what are the ones that are really most important to them? So now they've become motivated. You know, this week I'm walking for my heart. Next week I'm walking for my weight. Then I'm walking for my moods. I'm walking for my sleep. I'm walking for my immune system. I mean, pretty soon I'm running.
So you show them all the benefits or pros of change versus the cons.
Yes, and that partly really counters the time issue, because there's nothing you can do with your time that gives you as much benefits. And that's the kind of motivation that really keeps us moving ahead.
Are the pre-contemplation and preparation stages really necessary for lasting change? Why can't you just start with action?
The problem is, we know historically people have had only two options, take action or do nothing, like at New Year's. And it's a whole cultural thing. And that's
when you make a resolution, for example.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good option for people, because most people aren't prepared to take action. They take action, and within 21 days, 50% have failed and gone back to their old ways.
Wow. In your new book, you have not only revisited the stages of change, and we should say that the next stages after action are maintaining the new behavior and then termination, stopping. You know, you've made the change. It's part of your life.
Yes.
You've come up with some new, what you call principles for progress. And can you talk about how those help you move through the stages?
Yes. For example, across more than 50 different behaviors, and one of the reasons why it's so important is when what you're learning in this book is you can apply it to a wide, wide range of behaviors. And the first principle, progress from pre-contemplation, is to increase your awareness and appreciation of the pros of changing. And if your pros are going up, it actually means you're progressing, you're changing. It's like seeing your cholesterol coming down. Mm. And that reinforces you, and it can counter some of the demoralization.
Let's apply it to an example. I think a lot about decreasing the amount of ice cream I eat, for example. So I'm kind of stuck in the pre-contemplation part. How do I get to the action part there? What's the principle of progression?
Okay. Well, one of the things that we need to do is when you're ambivalent in the contemplation stage is to also start to lower the cons. So, for example, when we talked about exercise. But we need to recognize now the consensus is if we look at the most dangerous foods, it's sugar, 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 sugar.
But you can know that. You can know that intellectually, you know, that sugar is bad for you. But how do you go from knowing that intellectually to actually taking steps to reduce the amount of sugar you eat?
Right. Well, first of all, in terms of so that you're making a decision, then you go to a commitment. Okay, so I'm deciding I'm going to go and give up ice cream at this point, or I could start with cutting it back and reducing it.
Sounds terrible when you say it already. Okay, I'll keep an open mind.
Well, let me tell you, ice cream was one of my Achilles tendons. Okay, and what we had to do is what we started with was shopping lists. That's what controls what we eat. So let's take ice cream off the shopping list and then look for, okay, what's a pleasurable alternative that won't have the kind of sugar that it has, and I can substitute it. And so I still may, in terms of when I'm feeling emotionally stressed, I need some kind of comfort food. Now, it can be one that doesn't have that kind of sugar in it, and one that can be a healthy substitute. And then I need to also be reinforcing myself and share with others. In our book on Changing to Thrive, we start in terms of applying the model to stress and distress because we know that those emotions are what drives people to most of these unhealthy behaviors. When they're stressed or distressed, smoke more cigarettes, drink more alcohols, eat more ice cream. And so we want folks to be managing stress effectively in a healthy way.
The things I imagine like meditation or, you know, mindfulness, exercise, those kinds of things?
Yes, exactly.
Dr. James Prochaska is a researcher with the University of Rhode Island. Thank you so much for joining me.
Great being here.